Kia ora and welcome back to the show. Well, I'm very excited to have on the line right now to talk about some of the politics that has been going on recently. And well, there is plenty to talk about. I have former city councillor and current leader of the Opportunities Party, Mr. Raph Manji, on the line. Good morning, Raph.
Good morning, Liam. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, look, I'm good. I'm up in Auckland for a University of Auckland debating club election debate tonight, which is the first one of the season, so looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Yeah, they're getting ahead of the game, getting in nice and early for that one.
Come on, UC. Come on, UC.
Yeah, terrible. Hey, so this is the first time you've been on the show since you officially launched your candidacy for Ilam. How has that whole experience been going so far?
Oh, look, it's great. I mean, it was great to just sort of announce formally and get sort of, you know, supporters and friends together and get people a little bit excited about what lies ahead. And, you know, we've started a sort of a postcard drop out to the ward, so people will be getting that in their post boxes. And, you know, I was out, I think, the last 3 days doing that and just talking to people out and about, doing their garden, students moving into new flats in the ward. And it's great, and it's good fun, and it's the bit I enjoy about politics, is actually getting out on the ground and just talking to people about this and that and the sort of things they're interested in and what worries them. And, yeah, it's good. Very excited about it.
Yes, exciting times ahead, I have to say. But before we get too ahead of ourselves, there's plenty going on at the moment. Of course, I think kind of really at the forefront of conversation at the moment is, of course, Cyclone Gabriel and all the fallout from that. How do you think the government's response has been so far?
Look, I think, you know, the initial response was pretty sound. The Prime Minister was on the ground. The, you know, Civil Defence Minister was on the ground, Kieran McEnulty. I think he's done a great job. I think, you know, as with a lot of things, we're very good at our initial response. But as we start to think about the recovery, that's where I think we still struggle a little bit. And I'm not quite clear on what the government's plans are. You know, they seem to be taking quite a long time to move to that next stage, which is actually how are we going to deal with land that actually you cannot rebuild on? How do we move communities? Which roads and bridges do we repair? The model for actually doing those repairs. So, you know, I've talked a lot about that skirt alliance that we had in Christchurch that worked very well for delivering infrastructure repairs. You know, whether we look at what they did in Queensland after, you know, terrible flooding in 2010, 2011 as well, and set up a reconstruction authority, which then actually becomes your kind of disaster go-to place for whatever happens in the future. Because clearly, this is not going to be a one-off. We're going to be pummeled by rain and adverse weather events, you know, with two islands, and I don't think that's going to get better. So the government hasn't really made a lot of progress in that area. You know, they're talking about the sort of inter-ministerial department structure, and I don't know, that's where things start to get bogged down, as opposed to a sort of an independent agency whose sole job is to deal with disaster recovery and look at building resilience into the future. So I think probably the government needs to be thinking a bit harder about that.
You've touched on a really good point there, and it's that this whole event really raises some quite serious questions around housing, infrastructure of our roads, where we locate people. Brings up huge questions about what we're doing and how we're doing it. What's kind of the best takeaway people should have, the government should have from this disaster?
Well, I think, again, you know, what we learnt in Christchurch, you know, particularly, say, with the red zone, is that there are some areas you just, it doesn't make any sense to rebuild on. And particularly the way that we build here in New Zealand. So we're not building you know, houses, you know, on stilts like they might do in Queensland, which means if you do get occasional flooding, the house is well above the waterline. We're not building in timber. We're not building houses that are easily relocatable. So there's a lot of permanent material homes that you've seen, you know, damaged by slips or washed away.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, that's obviously pretty hard for people there, but it's even hard just to watch it. So I think, you know, how we approach our urban planning and rural planning, how we approach things like insurance. I mean, at some point, insurers are going to say, look, we're not going to insure properties in those areas. How we build in terms of houses that are probably easier to move if required. So these are all sort of quite important questions because, yeah, this is not a one-off. I mean, we've seen just in recent years the volume of water that we're getting out of the skies, these atmospheric rivers wandering around the globe, picking up a lot of moisture as the overall global temperature starts to heat up. We're going to get a lot more water in the skies, and then it's going to unleash itself. And then on the other hand, we've got fires in other areas where there's no rain. So, you know, we need to really think carefully about where we're building and not building in flood-prone areas or other areas of hazards, looking at coastal retreat. And I think we've talked around this issue for a long time, and now I think we've got to have a more serious conversation about it.
Yeah, the whole kind of beach lifestyle is really part of that Kiwi dream. Being near the water, beautiful summers, all that kind of thing. Do you think this is a great example of how we've kind of got to rethink the picturesque Kiwi lifestyle? Do you think that's sort of in danger?
Look, I think it is, yes, because we do have rising sea levels and coastal incursion. And remember, when we think about numbers around sea level rise, these are average numbers over a period of time. But it's when you get these storms, actually, the impact is much bigger.
Mm.
And so that's the problem when we look at things like, you know, 1 in 100 events. These are all kind of risk-based, probability-based outcomes. But actually, when it hits you, it's a one-off event, which can actually be much bigger than what you think. So, yeah, I think it doesn't mean you can't have beachside stuff. It just means that the way we build has got to be slightly different. So, you know, whether you actually end up with kind of, you know, trailer style, tiny home type things, which you can actually hook on a trailer and move if required, it's probably going to happen. I mean, there were stories I was reading, actually, the east coast of the States around the Hamptons, like really expensive properties, where actually they had actually lifted properties and moved them back. Now, you have to have considerable land to do that. So, yeah, I think that there's probably a lot of areas where probably the insurers will go, actually, we're not insuring that property. And, you know, the crazy amounts that people have paid for beachside property, they're probably going to struggle to get their money back on that. So I think it doesn't mean you can't be by the beach, but you've got to build appropriately. That's the key thing.
Mm. The government task force has been announced will be led by Sir Brian Roach, who seems to be...
Get everything.
Yeah, he seems to be the government's first man to call in pretty much any situation. Do you think he's the right man for this job?
No, not really. I mean, I think, you know, just the feedback from his time at NZTA wouldn't give you a lot of confidence. Look, I mean, these things are always political, and governments always appoint their people to lead things because then they know they're going to, you know, have control. I'm a bigger believer in appointing people who know what they're doing in particular areas. And again, the Queensland Reconstruction Authority is an example. And, you know, I'd say to your listeners, just go on their website and have a look, qra.gov.au, I think. And it's really fascinating stuff. And what they've done in the last 10 years has been, yeah, pretty interesting. And they have developed a system where, you know, they work with central government and with local government and with communities. And I think that is really the key thing. So I think the government, yeah, it's gone for the task force. That's the traditional kind of buy yourself a bit of time. And, yeah, people weren't particularly excited about the appointment. Like, if they'd appointed somebody who had significant experience in disaster recovery, I suggested, of course, that Honourable Leanne Dalziel as an option for that. You know, she's been through a lot over the last 10 years in Christchurch and has become quite skilled in that area. But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's what they do next that is probably the key thing.
Wow, quite the water theme going on this morning, because I want to move on to local water done well, which is National's Three Waters alternative. Interesting name choice, but that's not what we're here to talk about. What do you think of this? Do you think it's a decent alternative?
Look, I mean, it's much more in line with our proposals, which is basically scrap the four entities. They were a bad idea. It was taken from Scottish Water. I don't think they really thought through what the New Zealand context was like, and that it was probably not quite going to fit. And they spent a lot of time trying to draw lines on the map of our two islands to make it fit. And that, it just didn't make any sense to me. And as I've said previously, the financing side is not going to work either. I think, you know, I mean, I think the national proposal is better in that it is looking to keep local input there, which is important. Probably the main difference, apart from just kind of scrapping what Labour's proposing, is the introduction of an economic regulator, which is what we have for the energy companies, what we have for airports. So essentially, our utilities are regulated in the amount they can return.
Right.
But also how they should be investing money. Now, that's, you know, it sounds good on paper. What they're proposing in terms of supporting amalgamations, I think that is good. I'd like to see a little bit more backbone in there, because I think we do need to have amalgamations, but they do need to be organic. So we've seen Wellington Water, we have Watercare in Christchurch, you know, the Greater Christchurch councils are working closely together. And that's where we want to go to. But I think the bottom-up approach is much better than the top-down approach that Labour have. Now, you just need to make it very easy for that amalgamation to happen. So if enough councils vote to kind of join with each other, they can do that. I think that's a good thing. Where I think National haven't been very detailed is on the funding. So they're still kind of essentially saying ratepayers will continue to fund their water services, which is fine, but we're still left with the problem of the small authorities who can't afford that because they don't have the ratepayer base. Now, I think they sort of suggested they might help out there, but I'd still like to see the Crown fund this. I think, you know, if we want some serious efficiencies, I think from a funding point of view, I think we should still look at a centralised Crown funding model. But, you know, if I had to pick two options, yeah, I'd definitely go with the national side, because I think it builds on what we've got and focuses councils more on how they invest in water and make sure that they do invest in water, which is the critical thing.
I've seen a couple of commentators comment on the fact that the body of the legislation is fairly similar in some ways. Is that kind of a sign that from a central government point of view, regardless of who's in power, that there are parts of Three Waters that kind of make sense, that should be done?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any disagreement. I just think that the Labour top-down approach, they never really, I think, made the case for it. The numbers are so huge that you can kind of make up anything, really.
And
the assumptions in the actual models, like if you are into financial modelling and you go and actually look at the spreadsheets, you know, who the hell knows how much this stuff's going to cost in 30 years? I mean, we can't even budget for a rail line 5 years in advance. So
yeah, right.
So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, let's get this stuff done. Let's have it at a level where there's a lot more flexibility, which is at a localised level. Let's have the amalgamations come organically, which I think will happen. And you might end up with 10 or 11 regional type councils. And then, of course, the bit that we've talked about a lot is let's sort out local government first, because then these things will actually naturally fall out. But I think focusing on making sure that we do invest in our water system is really critical. So I think we'll get there. I think essentially Labour should throw their proposal out and start again. But I think it'd be good if we could all try and get on the same page, which is essentially we need to invest in the upgrade of our water system. We need clean drinking water. But also what the flooding has shown is that the storm water, which is essentially the third bit of the three waters, is something that should sit with local or regional government, because that's a planning issue. And that's why this kind of four entity thing never made a lot of sense, because, you know, how can you have councils which are, you know, 500 kilometres away from each other agreeing on how to manage stormwater?
Yeah, yeah. You raise an interesting point there. And now that National's kind of got their alternative out there, would it be a sign of weakness from Labour to get rid of their three waters policy now? Is there any move they can kind of make that will benefit them at this point?
Yeah, I think they're stuck, and I think probably my guess is that Hipkins, being fairly pragmatic, would probably like to get rid of the four entity model, but he's going to struggle because, I mean, look, there's a lot of caucus issues inside the Labour caucus. He's trying to manage those different views. So I don't know. But he said he's going to do something about it. They're not going to call it three waters anymore. They'll call it whatever, water investment services. but they are a little bit stuck. But it's good that at least National have put out a proposal, and then we've got a proposal. So, you know, there are three kind of proposals out there, all looking to deal with the same problem, which is how we invest. But, you know, to go back to the stormwater, in Christchurch, I mean, we spent like $50 million, I remember, back in 2015 on new stormwater management. Now, that's something that we did because it was specific to Christchurch and specific to the flooding issues that we'd faced after the Flockton Basin floods in 2014, but also the land movement that had happened after the earthquake. Now, in a full entity model, how are you going to get that money? You know, it's going to be very, very difficult. So I think Labour's got a problem. And, you know, they've got a problem with the health system. The centralization approach is the problem. That's the thing. So I think if they could somehow get away from that, which is unlikely, then a lot of these other issues could be resolved, because they're mainly funding issues when it comes down to it, and making sure that money is being invested. So that's, I guess, where the economic water regulator comes in. Yeah, so I think they've got a few problems, the government, when, you know, as the gloss comes off the change, I think they'll be under quite a bit of pressure.
Yes, I can't wait to see what comes in the next couple of months. Raf, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Great, good to talk, and have a good day.
Yeah, you too. And that was Raf Manji, former Christchurch City Councillor and current leader of the Opportunities Party, just announced his candidacy for Islam as well, which that'll be a race to watch. Oh, I'm excited.